The Brendan O'Connor Show on RTE Radio 1 with All Care Pharmacy. Discover a team that's always here to support you at All Care, taking care of communities across Ireland.
Now, let's take our Sunday service now. Some of you listening, I know, probably haven't felt human touch in a long time. And I think now that we're not allowed to do it in lots of situations, we're all realising how important touch is to us. Well, I'm joined now on the line by renowned Irish philosopher Richard Carney, who currently teaches in Boston. And Richard's new book is called Touch, Recovering Our Most Vital Sense. And it's about the importance of touch. And it also explores how even before the pandemic happened, we were, if you will, losing touch with touch. Richard, the book was written before COVID-19 and lockdowns and social distancing and everything, but it really resonates so much more now, doesn't it, that touch is kind of forbidden, that it's become almost dangerous, and that we're living through our eyes and through sight more than ever.
Yes, absolutely. I did write the book before the pandemic, but I didn't finish proofing it before the pandemic. So my publishers, Columbia University Press, asked me to do a postface, which I did. And of course, it sort of chimed very much with the anxieties of our time, because, as you know, Joni Mitchell says in a great song, you don't know what you've got till it's gone. And when we suddenly realized we weren't allowed to touch each other anymore, shake hands or hug or anything else, basic things, even turning the same doorknobs, you know, without putting on sanitizers, we realized in a way just how important touch has been for us and is for us and will always be for us, but we've sort of taken it for granted. And I mean, it's an extraordinary thing that, you know, our skin is our largest organ. In adult bodies, we carry 22 square feet of skin. You probably carry a bit more, Brendan. You're a big Cork man, but it's a huge amount of us. Yeah. And it's just such an important sense, you know, and in the pandemic, you know, there is this phenomenon I'm sure you've heard about called touch hunger, where people just reach out for each other, but they can't actually touch. So they go online, and that provides connectivity and contact. And God knows we probably wouldn't be talking now like this. I'm in Boston, you're in Dublin, if it wasn't for that. So we have a lot to be thankful for, but it's not the same thing. And again, in the pandemic, you know, when people are dying, the thing they want most, as the caretakers tell us, is to touch and be touched. And the tragedy of close family not being able to be with so many of them is really, you know, strikes the heart. So, yeah.
I that's think something you've experienced yourself, I believe, is it?
Well, one of our daughters, Sarah, got COVID. She's living in Mexico. And when she came back, she was in quarantine and, you know, had to go into the basement of the house here in Boston. And it was like having an illegal immigrant or a Jew during the Holocaust. You know, we just weren't allowed meet or touch. And we were aware of just how important it is to hug people. And when it's gone, you really, really miss it. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, I think everybody's had a personal experience, whether it's an ill or elderly relative or close family member or friend who one misses that, you know, that basic elemental contact, which is touch.
I thought it was interesting when you went into isolation in the days following lockdown, you found yourself visited by all these memories of touch from down the years and everything.
Yes, indeed. That's right. Just very early childhood memories even coming back, you know, being sort of when I was sick, my mother putting her hand on my forehead, you know, my feverish forehead, and just very, very early experiences of growing up and being in a very, as I was fortunate to be, you know, affectionate family. Where touch was so important. We had three generations living in our house. My grandmother, my parents, seven of us siblings, and then my sister's child. So we had four generations and very close-knit, very in medical family. So, you know, healing touch was very important. My grandfather, actually, from Roscarbery in West Cork, was called the French doctor because he always shook hands with everybody when we'd meet in the street. But he knew, people say that, you know, the bedside manner was so important. And my brother, Michael, who's a palliative care doctor working with the dying and COVID patients, of course, now, talks about the importance of holding people's hands, holding their shoulders, their elbows, as they're dying. It's just a fundamental need. And indeed, he was very inspired by a French doctor who in France, Professor Dominique Méniel, who says to all of his interns and students, he says, it is forbidden for nurses, interns, students not to touch aging patients. In addition to clinically examining them, they should hold their hands for long periods. Now, that was before the pandemic. Wow. But it's absolutely fundamental how central to healing touch is. And, just physiologically, since the pandemic, there are a lot of studies being done on touch. Prior to the pandemic, if you look at the statistics, for every 20 studies of sight, there was only one on touch. We sort of took it for granted. But now, people are coming up with these extraordinary medical facts that, touch lowers blood pressure, helps with sleep and digestion, bolsters the immunity system. Even at a basic level of our everyday being, it's so important.
So it's interesting then that sight had, in the West certainly, had displaced touch so as the critical sense that we live through. And I know in the book you go back to the roots of this, and I think we trust our audience after 12 on a Sunday that their minds are open to a little bit of philosophy. So to explain to me about Plato and Aristotle and about how sight became the important sense.
Yeah, okay. Well, as everybody probably does know, Plato and Aristotle go back to the very beginning of Western thought and Western civilization, the first psychologists, the first philosophers. And Plato basically argued that man, Greek anthropos, means the one who stands up, the one who reaches up and looks towards the skies. In other words, the movement away from the quadrupeds and our interspecies sort of belonging with the natural world towards our specific intelligence as human beings, as Homo sapiens, for Plato was linked with sight, because sight could keep things at a distance. Whereas touch, he said, brought us too close to things. You could see without being seen. You can stand back and look at something, 100 yards away, a mile away, with telescopes thousands of miles away. But when you touch, you're tangible. And this double sensation, as the Greeks realized, exposed us to others. And for Plato, this was too risky. So Platonic love for Plato, we even use the term, is keeping people at a distance, whereas giving us control of the environment. So the eye rules supreme. Whereas Aristotle, I don't know whether you want me to get onto him, actually said something different, although he lost the debate to Plato ultimately, which was, touch is our most universal and our most philosophical sense, because for him, the very fact that we're exposed to others when we touch, that we're touchable, we're tangible, meant that we were encountering otherness, newness, strangeness, right? And we weren't closed up in ourselves, as the eye can enable us to do. I mean, even digitally, we can connect with the world, but we're not touched by the world. We're not in touch with the world, but we have a supervision, so to speak. Whereas Aristotle said, it's precisely because touch makes us vulnerable to the other that we actually question who and what we are and who and what the world is. So that for him meant that we're most intelligent through our touch, because we're the most sensitive to otherness. We're the most receptive to otherness.
Yeah,
it's us to ask questions. Yeah,
and of course, and connected, I suppose, as well. And funny, connected is a thing that has kept coming up here over the last year. Whenever you talk to anyone around mental health or anything, it always comes back to connection. And I can see how sight, then the enlightenment and everything, it's all about seeing, but that basic primal connection, isn't it? And you talk also about how the body, in a way, holds our scars, our experiences, our history, our traumas, that it's all in there, and that touch is so important to helping with that as well.
That's right. Well, there's a wonderful book by a colleague of mine here in Boston, Van der Kalk, called The Body Keeps the Score. And a lot of work being done now in trauma, you know, physical abuse, childhood trauma, war trauma, and so on, is revealing just how much we have a carnal memory, that it's actually lodged in our carnal unconscious, you know, sort of with Freud and so on. The idea was almost that it was a mental psychic unconscious, but actually the psyche is lodged in our body, in our bones and in our skin and in our blood. And a lot of the therapy that's being done now takes this very much into account. That touch is so important for releasing and reliving and revisiting and ultimately redeeming these traumas. It's funny, I was watching something the other day, a podcast, Mindful Monk, with Simon Sleeman talking to Tony Bates, our great Irish psychologist. And Tony was showing this young boy, you know, who was suffering from ADD, and he was healed and settled by holding a hen, you know. And as he held these two hens in his arms, this little boy, he was about 6 or 7, and he said, the hens love me. And he was talking to the hens, and they were settling, and he was stroking their feathers. And you could see the healing, you know, just in his face, in his whole physical allure. And I think, you know, there are so many examples of this, of people being healed. I had my own experience years ago of depression. And I found at the time that I was very healed, not just by gardening, you know, touch by going out and planting roots and plants and trees, but also, you know, with my dog, Bella, and my sister-in-law, a horse. And, you know, there's a lot of equine therapy nowadays. People are greatly healed psychically and physically by close proximity to horses, who are nearly all skin, by the way, apart from their hoofs and their manes, if you think about it. And dolphins, curiously enough. Dogs, horses, and dolphins have proved to be very important therapeutic animals. And, of course, also, as anybody knows who has been through depression, and most of us have at some point and to some degree, you know, there's this, we can't read, we can't eat, we're not interested in anything. We feel this incredible disconnection and loneliness, but there's a huge touch hunger, you know, hunger to touch, to hug and be hugged by people. So whether it's, you know, touching the earth, touching animals, touching and being touched by loved ones, family and friends, it's so important to our psychic well-being.
Yeah, you had a very wise friend who said to you at a particular point in your recovery, enough talk, back to the body.
Yes, indeed. A very wise healer in Dublin. Yeah.
So get out of the head sometimes, yeah? You're not going to think your way through everything and just go with the body and trust that.
That's right. And I think one of the failures of psychoanalysis for many years was that Freud, who began very much with, you know, the laying on of hands and so on, he then turned psychology and psychotherapy and psychoanalysis in particular into analysis. It became a very mental affair, you know, what he called the talking cure. And God knows we do need the talking cure and we need to understand things. But people have realized increasingly, and I won't go into, you know, all the attachment theories and so on, but the carnal presence of two people in a room is absolutely crucial. I find this even, I'm going slightly sideways here, in pedagogy. Yeah. You know, I teach online now, like most teachers do, but I also have a class in person, small graduate class. And just the difference for me and for the students with us being physically present to each other, is so different from, you know, digital long distance online education, which God knows we're very, very lucky to have. It keeps the educational system going. But I think we all realize, students as much as teachers, just how crucial being in physical proximity is.
Do people vibrate off each other in ways we don't understand, do you reckon, physically?
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. I mean, there's a whole body language that's very unconscious and tacit, but very operative. There was a wonderful experiment done a number of years ago where they put a line of Italian businessmen together with a line of Japanese businessmen in the middle of this sort of big atrium. Yeah. And they followed it with a camera. And after half an hour, all the Japanese businessmen were backed up against the wall and all the Italians had gone from the middle of the room right back. Because what was polite for a Japanese, you know, citizen in their culture was, you know, 3 feet of distance. Whereas for the Italian, it was kind of 6 inches. And our bodies work like that. You know, we're picking up all kinds of signals without being consciously aware of it.
Yeah. Now, listen, if we put aside the pandemic and the effect that that has had on touch, but obviously, yes. This kind of primacy of sight over touch had been going on for a long time. And I guess a lot of it to do with the virtual worlds that we started living in. Yes. You talk about this notion of excarnation, that a phenomenon of the internet where we obsess about the body, but in increasingly disembodied ways.
Yes, 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 yes. That's right. We've sort of left the body behind. We see, you know, brave new worlds with this hyper connectivity of the World Wide Web, and marvelous it is. But we feel less and less with touch. And the word digital is very interesting because originally, and still today, digital can be your digital fingerprint. Digit means your finger. It's what touched the world. And it was the way in which the world touched you. You know, you have even in the wonderful Sistine Chapel, the picture, Michelangelo's picture of Yahweh and Adam, you know, reaching out to touch each other, the two digits, as it were, coming together. Mm. But now digital means code. It's the virtual code. And my argument is not against the virtual code. It's extraordinary. But that we need both, that we shouldn't lose the digital fingerprint as we move into the digital virtual world of technology. Because as one philosopher put it, technology overcomes distance, but it doesn't bring nearness. And there's a difference. Loneliness is one of the biggest symptoms of our current digital age, in fact, what I call the age of excarnation. Because in spite of and for all our hyper-connectivity, and that's wonderful, we can, as it were, be in touch with people and events all over the world, there's a profound inner loneliness, a lack of contact and what I call tact. And curiously, the experiments are showing that this sense of loneliness is even stronger with the millennials and the Generation Z, the current upcoming generation. So that's something, I think, to be observed. And a lot of our contemporary culture and the young people, you know, I teach this in class and my students are constantly educating me. But so many of contemporary films and TV series are picking up on this anxiety. You know, think of Westworld, that series, you know, where humans create cyborgs and they relate to them, but the cyborgs can't relate back to them. And so we can have dominion and mastery and manipulation, but it ultimately leads to tragedy. And then another one I'm thinking of, Ex Machina, that movie. I don't know whether you saw it, Brendan.
Yeah, I did, yeah, yeah. Fantastic movie.
With a fellow Corkman, Donald Gleeson, or at least the son of a Corkman, Brendan Gleeson, who plays the main role. But there again, you see this relationship with sort of a perfect cyber being, but the inability to touch is the tragedy of both protagonists. And there are so many other films. Her, you know, with the operating system, where the man falls in love with the operating system. Mm. And so our culture is picking this up. And even curiously, our gaming industry, you know, which is earning $150 billion a year. It's one of the highest grossing industries in the world now, the virtual gaming industry. But even there now, there are some of these video games, Death Stranding and so on, where we're witnessing digital technology putting itself into question. Not saying we should get rid of it, but saying if we go with it, and we should go with it, and it's our future, we mustn't leave touch behind. We need both. Because, you know, as the term goes, and not to use a big word, but we live in an Anthropocene, which for 2,500 years has governed through technology our world, and particularly with digital technology, the eye rules supreme. It's what's called optocentrism, the centrism of the eye. And there's a call now, and I make it at the very end of the book, for a symbiocene. Symbiosis is a Greek word for working together with, in connection with our natural and animal world. And with the climate crisis and ecological crisis, this is the most important moral question. How do we get back in touch with our lived animal interspecies earthly being?
Okay, and I know that a philosopher's job really is to possibly ask the questions more than give us a straight answer, but say if we take into account what COVID has done as well in terms of A, making touch so dangerous and scary for people, but B, giving us that craving for it again. Where do you think we go from here when that is over and taking into account the broader development of the virtual world as well?
Yeah, I mean, who can foresee the future? I think the most important thing is that we've had a wake-up call and that we've been brought back into touch with touch and the need for touch. You know, we've become aware again of our touch hunger and the fact that, you know, we came naked into the world and naked we shall depart. And the first sense we develop in the womb is touch. And the last sense that goes is touch. Touch is always on. Right? Even in sleep, touch is on, we're tangible. And the only two parts of our bodies that are not tactile and tangible are our nails and our hair. So that if you're going past a beauty salon, you don't hear people screaming when they're having their nails and their hair cut, because not tactile or tangible, but the rest of us is. So I think, as I say, there's a huge wake-up call here, as there is not just, you know, in our personal human being through COVID, but climate-wise, you know, as our former president Mary Robinson never ceases rightly to remind us, this is the most important moral problem of our age. And that's a call that's coming from outside of the human world. So touch brings us into touch, not just with ourselves, but also with the non-human world, which we have utilized and manipulated at our peril. And sight enabled us, curiously, to do that, precisely because you can see without being seen, you can hear without being heard, you can taste without being tasted, but you can't touch without being touched or touchable. That's our fundamental vulnerability, the nakedness of our skin, and what keeps us human.
Yeah, Richard, Plato has a lot to answer for, doesn't he? So it's time to finally throw off his yoke and get down and dirty again and reconnect with that we are an animal too. I suppose.
We are creatures of the earth, indeed.
Yeah. Okay. Richard Carney, Charles B. Selig Professor in Philosophy at Boston College, thank you very much. And the book is called Touch, Recovering Our Most Vital Sense. And Richard, where can people get the book?
Well, I would have said in the past in every good bookshop, but I don't know whether bookshops are open in Irish towns and cities at the moment, but I presume online. Back to the digital.
Yeah. Okay, Richard, thanks a million. Great to talk to you. Bye.
A great pleasure, Brendan. Thank you. Bye-bye.
Email brendan@rte.ie.